This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, welcome to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dashrin Johan. Why doesn't Kuala Lumpur have ADUNs, or state legislators, similar to other states? The city does have MPs after all. Why is there a Federal Territories Minister in the cabinet? And why is said minister almost always from outside the Federal Territories? Why does any of this matter, and what can we do about it? So joining me on the show today is Iskandar Faris. He's the Publicity Secretary of DAPC, which is DAP's youth wing of the Federal Territories. Now, DAPC has been advocating that the people of KL should be empowered to elect their own government. Welcome to the show, Iskandar.
Thank you, Dashan. Happy to be here.
So before we get into the political side of it, right, let's just talk about Kuala Lumpur in general, perhaps the background of the territory, right? Give me a little bit about Kuala Lumpur, its population, its demographic background, and as well as how finances are spent in this region.
For Kuala Lumpur, so it's an interesting area. In 2022, DBKL, or the City Hall for Kuala Lumpur, is allocated approximately 2.7 billion. And comparison to other states like Selangor, which has 2.34 billion, and Johor 1.95 billion, and Perlis 306 million, this is quite a sum of money. So we can say that in terms of resources, it is well-resourced and has higher allocations compared to other states in the Federation. In terms of population, the population of Kuala Lumpur stands currently at 1.7 million people in 2021. This far exceeds most states like Perlis, which has 255,000 people. Malacca, 938,000, Negeri Sembilan with 1.13 million, even Terengganu at 1.27 million. So in terms of these two areas, we definitely see a huge population, and also high resources invested in this area. In terms of breakdown or distribution, there is this misconception that non-Malays outnumber the Malays in Kuala Lumpur, but if we see from 2019 statistics, 47.5% are Bumiputra, Chinese at 41.1%, and Indian population about 10%. So this negates the notion that the Chinese outnumber the Malays in Kuala Lumpur.
Right. So, you know, when we look at KL, it's interesting because it is a federal territory. It's a city, but, you know, it's not the same as, let's say, Johor Bahru, which just, you know, people just say, okay, it's the capital of Johor and that's about it. KL is a unique thing, just like Labuan and all that. They all come under this thing called federal territory. So perhaps you can tell me a little bit about this, the histories of KL. When and how did it become a federal territory?
So KL achieved its city status in 1972. Then it became the federal territory in 1974. So this admittedly made KL become the capital city, and it needs a territory of its own. So when it becomes a federal territory, it's an administrative area under the direct and exclusive jurisdiction of the federal government. A federal territory is part of the federation, but it's not part of any state. So it's directly governed by the government of the day, or the federal government of the day. This is not an unusual practice. We have seen it in Australia, where the Australian Capital Territory, the ACT, is governed in a similar manner. Even Washington, D.C., we have Brasilia in Brazil. Even Jakarta, Jakarta has a different arrangement, but what I want to highlight is that all these places has some sort of an election at the territory level. So becoming a territory itself doesn't exclude them from being able to elect their own government. So that is where we differ in terms of the governance for this territory.
Right. And before we get into the governance aspect, right, why, perhaps you can highlight, right, why, what does this federal territory even mean? Why is its classification important? Why should people, the regular Joes living in Kuala Lumpur, why should they care about any of these things?
So unlike governments, like unitary government, that is, I think in a layman's term, that has only one level of government. We are living in a federation. We have been in a federation for decades, and that it was the mold of which we, or Malaysia, or back then Malaya was built upon. And with this, there comes negotiation between states and the federal government. The federal government becomes the aggregator, or the one managing different interests of the states. But also, when we have a federal government, we can't. There is a question of state rights and the federal rights, or federalists or stateless. So when we have a territory, it's basically an area that is governed directly by the federal government. And we have, as of now, three federal territories: Kuala Lumpur, Putrajaya, and Labuan. And as I've said earlier, when we talk about Kuala Lumpur as an area, if we compare to other states, it does deserve to have its own territorial government, just given by the fact that a lot of resources is being invested in this. Like I said, KL City Hall is allocated about 2.7 billion, which is the highest allocation among, if we compare to other states. So rather than focusing on the classification, I rather emphasize on the need for these people who are living in these territories to be able to choose their own representative. And starting with KL, I see them not having the right to choose as denying their part or their duty as citizens.
Right. And that is particularly interesting, right? Because like what you just mentioned is also what you mentioned in the press release that you sent out, which was, and I quote, you mentioned that it is time for the people of this capital city to elect their own representatives. But you know, I guess some might then question, right? Doesn't the federal territories have representatives? We are talking about, for example, Hannah Yeo in Segambot, Tengku Adnan in Putrajaya, etc. So what exactly are you pushing for here?
So for now, the only elected reps that the people of KL have are members of parliament who do not have any say when it comes to the administration of KL. Parliament, with its competing priorities, national-level policies, programs, it is not a suitable forum or platform to deliberate on local issues that faced by the everyday folks of KL. To point out one matter is when, I think last year, the collective of MPs in KL asked for a bipartisan committee to govern, co-govern KL. So this means that even when most of the KL voters voted for them as MPs, they don't have any say in how the area is being developed or being governed or being run. So, and rightfully so, MPs shouldn't be the ones handling this. It should be a state level or territorial level representative, even local level. We can argue. So with that in mind, we need some sort of a territory / state or a local government that is elected by the people to run the show. We can't have someone who is not even chosen by the people, who might be chosen from the voters of Arau or Perlis or even Kelantan, to run the show. It's totally it's reverse logic. So in terms of local government elections, we know that since the Indonesian confrontation and emergency on in 1964, that led to the suspension of local elections.
Right.
The enactment of Local Government Act of 1976 led to the abolition of local authority elections. Then the Act provided that mayor or president of councillors of local authority, such as city council in terms of KL, in the case of KL, shall be appointed by the state authority, or if KL is appointed by Yang Di-Pertuan Agong on the advice of the Prime Minister. So we can see a direct link of the executive having a say in what's being done in a territory. So there is no separation of power between territory and the federal level. If you compare to a state has a chief minister or Menteri Besar that governs the state, which can have a difference of opinion with the Prime Minister. That difference of opinion creates room for rights of the people of, let's say, Selangor, Perak to be upheld if in any manner the federal government embark on a plan that would endanger the rights or the interests of these people. So again, KL being the most among the most populous area should have their own right to choose their own government.
Now, something you brought up earlier, this idea that the federal territories could then be, you know, could be governed by someone from outside the federal territories, even someone from Arau and all of these things, right? And that is the reality that we've been seeing over the years. Most administrations, a lot of times they just, because there is a federal territories minister in the cabinet itself, most of the time that minister, because the ministers are, you know, the Prime Minister gets to choose whoever he wants to put, a lot of times is not from federal territories. For example, even right now, the federal territories minister is Shahidan Kasim, and he's from Perlis. Now, I'm not questioning the quality of these individuals, or whether they are able to do their task or something. I'm more questioning the logic of it. Why? How has this been allowed to happen? Why is there, you know, the federal territories minister just from any part of the country, someone who doesn't even reside in Kuala Lumpur, perhaps, someone who doesn't reflect the aspirations of people of Kuala Lumpur? How is this allowed to happen?
You're right, Dashan, to question that. I think this this ultimate question needs to be posed to the government of the day, because they are the ones who chose the said person to be the federal territory minister. So we also question why this is the case. In terms of administration, there should be a localization and or democratization at the local level or the territory level. And I think most people would agree that KL, even Labuan and maybe Putrajaya, needs to be governed by someone who either comes from there or elected by the people who reside there, who are voting there. So I think this is a question that needs to be answered, especially by the federal government of the day. And we at DEPSI really look forward to their response.
On the show with me today is Iskandar Faris, Publicity Secretary of DEPSI Federal Territories. After the break, I ask him, why is there a Federal Territories Minister in the Cabinet in the first place? We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashan Johan, and on the show with me today is Iskandar Faris, Publicity Secretary of DEPSI Federal Territories, and we're discussing the need for KL to be able to elect its own representatives. So, Iskandar, why is there a need for a Federal Territories Minister in the Cabinet in the first place?
Undoubtedly, we need a new arrangement of how we administer these territories. And from the bigger picture, we need a new federal state arrangement. From news reports in, I think last year, the Minister of Local KPKT, Rizal Marikan, said that there are no new plans to reintroduce local government elections because of certain reasons of cost and how this does not guarantee better services for citizens. But I beg to differ. I think any cost related to democracy is an essential cost. It's a necessary cost. And democratization ultimately benefits the many, because first you have accountability, you have direct access or even check and balances for your representatives. Second, you have a say or a participatory role to determine the future or the path for that area or that state or that territory in question. And I agree with you that we need a new way of governing. That if there is a local election, might be then the case of whether a federal territory minister is relevant or not, then we can move on to that kind of question. And whether he or she should sit in the cabinet in the first place also can be discussed. But I think the most important thing is to have this discussion and also to push towards a local level or territory level government that is elected by the people. That is the most important agenda of the day. And I think there are many ways we can arrange the government or the local government or the territory government, depending on the needs and the dynamics of politics at that level. Because some people would say, we already have a city hall, why do we need a state government? Then maybe it's a question of elevating the city hall to a state level-like government. So I'm not saying that KL needs state representative. I'm not saying that they need ADONs. I'm saying that they need representatives similar or at the same level of ADONs. Right. Then we can also ask whether we need local councillors, because they now have ADONs. These are questions that we need to discuss as we go along, because there are, I'm sure many stakeholders haven't been in this kind of discourse, and it's good to start this discourse. Then we can evade any blind spots that might occur or might face in the future when we embark on this very ambitious journey.
Now, you brought up a lot of points about democracy, which is very important, as undeniably so. But I think a lot of people will want to know, what does this democratic process or expanding democracy, how is it going to ultimately affect their bread and butter issues, their day-to-day lives, right? Why do people need to come out and champion for this? What are some of the problems and challenges that have arisen because of the lack of local representation, on the flip side, what could electing their own representatives benefit them in terms of their day-to-day bread and butter issues, or just policies and things that will affect the lives of people in Kuala Lumpur?
So just to mention a few, one thing in particular is when we talk about the problems that may arise from this is conflict of interest. Recently, there's this issue of gazetting Bukit Persekutuan or Federal Hill as a green area. But then the KL Mayor, Mahathir Cik Ngah, says the Federal Hill belongs to the federal government as private land. So in this drama alone, we can see that there is no recourse for a KL mayor to question any action by the federal government, because at the end of the day, he is appointed by the federal government. So the right or the interest that he is aligned to will be the interest of the federal government. Even if he is a person who tries to be independent, the perception is still that he is answerable to the federal government, because he is appointed on the advice of the Prime Minister, who is the head of the federal government. So this area of perception is already problematic. Then when we talk about the benefits of electing own representative and how does this impact to their day-to-day or bread and butter issues, I would say that day-to-day problem is at the forefront of our lives. We deal with different problems every day. We deal with issues of business licenses if a person is a local trader, a small trader. We deal with road issues, drainage issues, land issues, traffic congestion, the flow of traffic, all sorts. So democratization at the local level allows us to pick the right leaders and representatives who are capable in addressing these issues that we face. So this is, we can say, some would say very minor issues, but these are it's a common problem that we face every now and then. And on the broader level, having local representation or representative with a greater understanding of how the locality is, how the locality functions, how the area is being developed, the history, the background of the area, and the issues that are close to the people, so that they are better in a better position to come up with solutions for this problem. We can talk about urban poverty, joblessness, even COVID. How do we move on, or how do we rebuild the community post-COVID pandemic, and any other socioeconomic hardship faced by city dwellers would be better understood or comprehended by these local elected leaders. So I think giving back power to the people is important, especially in a city like KL, where it has grown uncontrollably. We are seeing during the pandemic, the city came to a halt. We've seen it grown for decades, but because of movement restrictions, MCOs and different iterations of MCOs, we see the city becoming a ghost town.
Right.
Because the reality of KL is that people only come there to work, and then they go back to the suburbs to continue their lives, work. They work in the city, but live and play outside the city in the suburban area. So this will contribute to future decay of KL as people move towards the suburban area, because KL becomes too expensive to live. The lifestyle in KL becomes too expensive to be affordable. Then people will desert the city, making it into a future ghost town. And what would be the future or the destiny of KL if that happens? We've already seen in Indonesia how Jakarta becomes so congested and it runs the risk of being submerged in the coming decade. So the government decided to move its capital from Jakarta to now Nusantara in right. The Borneo island. So what if that similar thing happened to KL? What would happen if we move our capital city to another city? What would be the outcome for KL? Would it still be the thriving city that we know and love? Or would it run the risk of being another abandoned city because it doesn't have enough pool of residents that has invested energy and effort to build it or to sustain its living? So these are the questions I think we need to answer, and it should start with having the right to choose our own leaders.
And do you think in our current system, right, because I'm reminded of an interview Hannah Yeo recently did, and you know, what she said was particularly interesting. She said that what she noticed about a lot of people in KL is oftentimes there is a sort of gap, or they have no idea who they should sort of voice their grievances to. Because in Johor, let's say, for example, my family is in Kempas, for example, and if like something, there's some problem in Kempas specifically, you know that there's an Adun in Kempas, he or she will focus on that area. It can be something as small as like a clogged drain or potholes and things like that, or it could be something bigger. You know, like, okay, the first step, you take it to the ADO and things like that. Whereas in KL, like, people often don't know like where I should sort of channel my grievances to. So everybody just goes and find whichever MP they can find and say like, okay, look at my problem. And it's not that the MPs don't want to work on the problems. It's that MPs need to also focus on parliament, like what you brought up earlier, on parliamentary issues and you know, national level politics. And it's a bit challenging to, you know, like sort of divide their attention that way. How do you see it?
Yeah, that is a valid point. And I think I would like to add that these MPs wouldn't or do not have a role in the overall management or administration of KL, because KL is run by DBKL, and DBKL is answerable to the mayor and also the Minister of Federal Territories. So in that kind of structure, there is no position where we see these MPs can have authority to do anything. So I think so far, the MPs of KL has they have been proactive enough to make or to solve problems even without this authority. So I would think the way forward is to actually restructure the whole system so that the line of authority is clearer, and as you said it yourself, the people of KL need to know where they can go to have this problem solved. They go to their MPs because there are lack of channels to go to. There are a lack of people's representative in KL. Although the local councillors appointed by DBKL might be around, might have some of them might be more accessible. They might be more accessible to people. But this is a structural issue, and we need to solve it by reforming the way we govern or the structure of the government itself. And I think that should be our ultimate aim.
So how do we get there from where we are right now to this sort of ideal structure that you are proposing? How do we? What are the changes that needs? Are we talking about like a constitutional amendment, or you know, where every you know you need 2/3 majority of parliament, and then only we can do this? What are the sort of political maneuverings that need to happen so that this ideal can be achieved?
For a start, local government elections is important. That can be the low hanging fruit that we at least deliberate upon. The people of KL, they're living in a territory or an area with only MPs as their people's representative. If we can see, KL's a big area. Even some of the districts are divided up into multiple areas. If we talk about Segambut, we have Mount Kiara, we have Bukit Damansara, we have Segambut itself, Manjalara, and the Duta district, TTDI. So how we structure this kind of different administrative areas is important, but that can take into a bigger discussion of starting or restarting local elections. So either elevating DBKL, the city hall, into a state government, or having another state government itself, that is also a question that we need to pose to ourselves. But the most important thing is to have that awareness that local election is a necessary investment. It's not a good to have. It is essential in the sense to give voice or power to the everyday people who are living in these areas to decide the fate of the area itself. So the more we deny them the voice, the more disenfranchised people will be with the system. And it feeds upon into this vicious cycle of people not believing in our democracy, and with that, having a few stakeholders or a few interested parties ruling over us for the longer period. That we have been seeing in Kuala Lumpur over the decades because of the lack of democratization. And I think this needs to stop. And we need to start championing democracy at the local and territory level so that it becomes the norm to elect our own representative at that level.
All right. Before I let you go, Iskandar, would you have a final message for us?
My final message would be that empowering democracy in the capital of Malaysia will further encourage the public's participation in Kuala Lumpur's administration. And this would further build a more resilient community that is able to face any challenges, especially the ones we might encounter in a post-COVID era. Therefore, efforts to introduce elections at the territorial and local council levels in KL should be initiated. This should start with an engagement session with multiple relevant stakeholders so that we can best identify a suitable method and timeline for this implementation.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Dasharan.
That was Iskandar Faris. He's the Publicity Secretary of DAPSI Federal Territory, sharing his thoughts on why Kuala Lumpur needs to be empowered to elect its own government. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcast from. You just have to search Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dasharan Johan, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.